This is CliffCentral.com.
Iskupu. Yours ain't banging like mine. Yo, what's up, guys? It's your girl, Gigi LeMaine, and you're tuned into The Unplugged Radio Show on Thursdays right here on Cliff Central from 12 to 1 p.m., baby. Are you ready?
Yeah, baby. Yeah. It's time for yet again another one of those absolutely fantastic days. Wow, guys. It's the shortest hour of the week. I say it every single time. And it certainly does prove to be real. It's really the shortest hour. Welcome to Unplugged and In Charge. You're listening to Weza Matomane. You can call me Weza That Guy. Always a great time to be here. Always positivity in the studio. I always have positive people doing amazing positive things in the studio as well. And they're, of course, doing these great things to make South Africa, the continent, and the whole world a better place. And that's something that we all should do, you know, just do the little that you can where you are. Shine your little light. And guess what? In no time, you know, we just start to see a brighter day because everybody's doing something to move us forward. And that's what's important. I'm hoping that you're having a great day. Today's date is the 8th of February today. In case you're listening to this like years from now or something like that. It was a sunny day. There was a bit of clouds out here in Morningside today. But it's a good day. No, more or less it is. I walked into Pick and Pay today and it was load shedding. There was literally no lights. It was dark. I had to look for my food in the dark there. It was crazy. People were walking through with phones, trying to, you know, walk through the aisles. And, you know, just as I got to the tills, they said, the till just stopped working now. I was like, South Africa. You know, I just had to leave the food there. So I might be a little bit hungry, but alas, I did manage to grab a muffin on my way here. So I'm okay. You know, something got me thinking. Last week we had Gil Oved here in the studio. Now, Gil Oved is the CEO or the co-CEO of the Creative Council. He's done so many amazing things. I mean, they built the Creative Council from the ground up. And then in about 2015, they sold it for more than 100 million rand. So he's pretty rich, you know. He's still working, but I mean, you know, he's doing quite well. And he had amazing lessons to share with us, which is a series called Lessons from Legends. Now, we have a couple of these legends coming through a little bit later in the week. And in fact, sometimes later on in next month as well. And we'll keep you updated with that series as it comes along, because it's something absolutely amazing. Every now and again, I'm going to drop another one from the lessons that we, of course, can learn from these amazing, amazing legends. But something interesting caught my attention just observing him. And that this is actually something really, really fantastic that I think that we can all learn from in some way or the other. You know, there's this thing that we always try to do, maybe with our family or those close to us. Or in fact, when you go on a date, let's say go on a date for the first time, you want this girl to think that you're amazing, right? So now you're there and you're thinking, I probably need to sum up everything great about myself and just tell her all the cool stuff and tell her what I've achieved. And, you know, you're thinking that's the way you can get to impress somebody. But sometimes, in fact, counterintuitively, all you need to do really is just sit there and observe and listen to them and ask them about themselves. When you show that you're very interested in someone else, they somehow just get this feeling of euphoria. You know, she'll walk away from that date saying, "You're the best person she's ever met." And then her friends will be like, "So tell me about him." And like, "I don't actually know that much. All I know is that he's great," you know. And that's something sometimes that we can actually become these great people that we really want to be. Not always by our accolades or what we've done, but sometimes just by our listening ear. How much attention we pay when we are with people, and what is the quality of energy that we give them when we are in their presence. Now, what I observed from Gil is this. He came in here, man. This man, he's important, right? And not a lot of people in the studio knew who he was, but I did, obviously, because he's my guest. he came in and he greeted me and we had a small little chat. And as we were walking into studio, he noticed somebody in the holding room, and he greeted, hello. And that person said hello and looked back down, because that's more or less how things happen. And then he said, how are you? And he stopped to listen. And the person was shocked, like, whoa, I'm fine, thanks. But that's amazing that he actually had to stop to find out how you are doing. He doesn't even know you. But this is the judge of character, is it not? When you can, take time from your busy schedule and just give that quality time to someone else to hear about them. He could have, made it about noticing his presence. The CEO of the Creative Council is here. Everybody, quick. But instead of that, he made it about the person. Whether the person is someone significant here at Cliff Central or maybe not, it didn't really matter to him. All that mattered is, hey, here's a human being and let me greet and let me be nice. Which is something that I guess we can all learn. In fact, the inverse is also true. What happens after you've listened to somebody and they think you're this amazing person, not because of what you said, but what you allowed them to say in your presence while you were giving your attentive ear. What happens after that is they say, okay, now enough about me. Tell me about you. Oh, great. Now they're going to listen to you. Instead of normally that conversation being both of us trying to talk over each other. Hey, I also did this. Oh, wow, that's cool, because I also did that, and trying to impress each other. Rather just make it about the person. And today I'm going to make it about the people. I got some really amazing people with me in studio right here. I did say that we got great people who do great things. They're just positive energies, man. Now, they're part of an organization called Sitanda. You just have to say it with that real accent, like, not Sitanda, it is Stand. You know what I mean? It's almost like Siatanda. Sitanda lento sienzayo. It's we love. That's pretty much what it is in Xhosa. So we want to find out what exactly they love. What are they passionate about, these people? Who are they? What they've done, and how far they have come along in their journey as well. So we first up joined by Gareth. Gareth Ruttle.
Correct.
Ruttle. How are you doing, Gareth?
Yeah, good, yourself?
Fantastic, man. So, Gareth, before we go into Siatanda, tell us about yourself. We're going to make it about you today.
Okay, cool. So, my name's Gareth. I'm from, born and bred Joburg.
Mm-hmm.
Stellenbosch boy for university. Come from an awesome family. Never wanted for anything. Really blessed with my life and what I've been able to experience and do in my life. And we just came together with a couple of mates a while back, and we wanted to give back. We wanted to make it easier for people to give back and to give back to the community.
Wow, that's pretty cool. Now, what sparks something like that? What sparks wanting to give back? Is it maybe growing up in a certain area where you're seeing inequality around you, or what sparked it for you and your mates?
So for me, I was actually doing a degree through Gordon Institute of Business Science, and we were in a marketing lecture, and we had a fantastic lecturer that was giving a talk to us. And what she really did changed my life and my view, because she made me realize that we all have the responsibility and the ability to make a difference in our lives. So, we all know, a lot of people know about all these injustices that are out there, all these inequalities, but we just don't know where to start. We don't know how to start making a difference and how to give back. I think at the core of Sitanda, our intrinsic belief is that people do want to make a difference and they do want to give back. They just often don't know how to. How to start, where do you start, and it was a frustration for me as well. And through that course, I kind of realized that it was up to me to make that a possibility. And then from there it just evolved. We came together, me and a couple of friends, and we just said, cool, let's create a platform that allows people to easily make a difference. When you've got that feeling like you want to make a difference and you don't know how to, it's a very helpless feeling. And yeah, we're just trying to make it more accessible and easier for people to give back.
Mm. So at this time, you were still students at the institute, and that's pretty much at the time that you guys wanted to start this, or was it after you graduated?
It was completely a byproduct of that. I think that, you know, that compelled us to start to do something. It got us off our asses.
Mm-hmm.
And just, yeah, it gave us a calling. You know, there's the old Spider-Man saying, with great power comes great responsibility.
Yeah.
And I think it just hit us that we have the power to make the difference, and we needed to act on that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. So this sparked all the way in Stellenbosch, or?
No, here.
Yeah, all right. Yeah. Oh, so you moved to this side, and that's where the education happened, and that's where the spark started.
Yeah.
Now, it is never really an easy thing to you know, to just get started. Usually what we all hear quite a lot is the word they or them. What I mean by that is, you know, you'd be sitting with your mates and they would say, you know, they should make a straw that has, like, you know, electricity that can actually, like, turn your water into, like, juice as you drink it. Like,
that's there's a shocking always idea.
So I just made a random example.
No, I'm just joking.
But usually there's this they should do this, they should do that. You know, it would be so cool if they or if somebody came up with a cure for this, or, you know. And what do you have to say to that type of mindset versus what you just said about almost like being Spider-Man and realizing I've got the power?
So, yeah, well, it's a tough one. I think, you know, that's a realization that people need to have. I think, you know, the main reason why we wanted to come on here today is to kind of get that message that you can do what you want. And you, if you believe something and you dream something, just do it. Just start. We didn't know what we were doing in the beginning. We started a Facebook page, I think it was, and we just started creating events and joining 94.7 and these little events with four or five of us, and just started trying to get our word out there and get our message out there. And it just kind of, it evolves from there. There's no like aha moment where it's like, boom, here we go. Now we got a awesome organization that's, you know, making a difference and building schools. It wasn't like that. It's that's happened over the last 3 years, and it's, you know, it's getting traction now. And that's the fantastic part to see. But yes, digging deep in the beginning and kind of, you know, carrying on when you don't see the results immediately, you don't get the instant gratification. That's where you got to push through.
Yeah. What does it take to make a really rockin' NPO? Like, what does it take?
So, you know, at the core of us, I think we're trying to make it fun. A lot of our events, we're trying to pull people together. So from a fundraising point of view, we create these great events where people come in. They're often sporting related, but we also do comedy nights. We do a wide variety of events, and we try and make it fun. We want people to come there, possibly even throughout the night, forget that they've actually, you know, just by being there, they've raised money, and actually making them realize that at the event. We've got Midmar coming up now. We've got 75 swimmers coming. Everyone's really excited. We're getting people to go out. You know, some people most of the guys are not athletes, but they're coming to be part of the Gias, part of a great weekend, meet some great people. And through the process, we're on the 75,000 Rand mark now, and we're hoping to hit 100,000 by the weekend.
Oh, fantastic. Wow, man. So you like telling us half of what it takes, and then, you know, then you don't tell us anymore. It's almost like you want to keep the recipe to yourself. I'm asking because there's somebody listening right now who says, I also want to make a difference. You know, I just like you said, that a lot of people want to give and they want to give back. Some want to join things, some want to start things. Should they start it alone? You mentioning we, who's we, you know, how many are you? How many were you at the beginning? Are you paying these people salaries? We want to know that deep stuff, because it helps when I try to start my NPO to kind of have an idea of how these things work and up to what stage can you start, you know, thinking, because there are people, you know, getting paid a salary is never a bad thing. Especially if you get to pay get a salary for doing what you love to do and for giving back and for making a big difference. Because a salary just means that you get to do that full time and that's your job now. Your job is to make people's dreams come true, you know, in a sense, which is a great thing. But how, like, if it's 3 years into the NPO, does it ever get to a stage where you can say some of my friends have quit their jobs and they're now working for the NPO?
We've got that story.
Wow, yeah, tell me about that story.
Cool. So I think just going back to the beginning, one of the reasons why we started this is because we often felt like there wasn't enough transparency in NGO work and relief work. Everyone's always asking for money, and you know, in any given day you can get asked by 20 different organizations to give money. And where's that money going? You know, how do you know where it's gone and who it's benefited, or if it's gone to, you know, really nice rug at the entrance hall of the offices for the NGO? you don't know. So I think one of the things we've always tried to push from the beginning is to have that transparency, to keep people up to date. You know, our financials are an open book. In terms of the five of us, there's five of us that started it. Great bunch of guys. We were mates from varsity, from school, and started off as three of us, Ryan Tyke and Nick Braby. And then as we went, I think it's fair to say that we inspired, you know, a lot of people to jump on our train, and they really got involved and beyond the call of duty. And then Strath Hageman and Matthew Wickham joined us as well. Matthew runs our Durban branch, where we're actually building our ECD centers. In terms of the five of us, none of us take a salary. We don't believe that it's something that's on the books for us at the moment. We are employing people that are coming into the charity. I think one of the core, like, when I rest my head on a pillow at night, if I know there are so many great people out there, and if I know that I'm creating, like, you know, an NGO that's allowing for people to have their full-time job as giving back, then for me it's fantastic. Then Sitanda is worth it from a completely selfish point of view. So yeah, like you said, now, I mean, I was in Israel last year, and there was a lady speaking, and I think that's kind of where it hit me. There was a lady speaking. She was working for an NGO, and her full-time job was to come into, like, the remote parts of Africa and go and install borehole water for the people who had to walk miles to get water. And I saw how happy it made her. And if someone hadn't started that charity, she would probably be working corporate or something.
Yeah.
And now she can go and do every day. She can go and make a difference.
Absolutely.
And that's what we want to do. We want to grow this thing. We want to get our 30-40 schools out there, change the game in terms of providing a great level of education to children, as well as being able to employ people who are genuinely so good in their hearts and can give back nonstop.
Great. Now, there you mentioned now some really important, you know, parts of this, and you also mentioned exactly what is necessary. You see, it's important to iron out those things in the beginning as you're starting, so that you start with the right like-minded people when you're starting your NPO, and you grow it in the right way, so that there's no conflicts later on to say, why aren't we get paid? I thought we were gonna, and you could say, no, this is why we started it, this is our core, and this is how are we going to stay true to, you know, to our core beliefs, which is something quite fantastic. And then when you're also mentioning that, now you can get to, you know, see other people live their dream, you know,
exactly.
which means that it's quite important that you begin with the end in mind, know that bigger picture, like what type of contribution would you like to see people have because of what you're doing for them. And that, I think, is something also quite remarkable as well.
Yeah, and I think to reinforce that, one of our directors, Ryan, is actually left work full time now, and he's doing this full time, and he's helping us, you know, get so much traction out there. Obviously, from outside, all of us are running this part time at the moment, so it's all after hours, late nights, Skype calls at, you know, late in the evenings, trying to keep this thing going forward. And there's so many people that come along in that journey just when you're running out of steam, that just come in, and you can see the difference it makes, and it keeps you going. And it's so great to see Ryan, you know, taking this with both hands, and we all firmly believe that this is going to be something big. And, you know, I wish for us, and I wish for him, that we can get the funding, the corporate funding or the annuity funding, you know, in the near future, where he can step into a permanent position, mm. and it can make it, you know, part of who he is and what he does, because that is Ryan. Ryan gives back all the time. And
now you're mentioning something great there, because there's sometimes where the people who start the thing do run out of steam. You know, you're trying so hard, work is taxing, you start to start a family, and things just, you know, are not as they were, you know, 3 years ago when you started. And you're saying that it makes a big difference when a member of the community says, hey, I've got about a month, I can help you guys for a month. And it just pushes you guys a lot further, even if they exit after a month. But it does do a huge deal of good.
So Liz,
mm-hmm.
Liz came, she heard about our story. I don't know if you want to intro Liz quickly.
Cool. Yeah, let's get in with Liz. Liz, how are you doing?
I'm well, how are you?
Fantastic. So Liz, are you one of those good Samaritans that watched the ship from the side and said, hey, I want to join that ship?
It didn't exactly go that way. I heard about Tithunder through a friend who knows Gareth, and he told me all about Tithunder. And I think that night, the minute I went onto all of their social media pages, I got so excited, because immediately you can see the passion and enthusiasm that that they run Tithunder with. And it was just, ever since I was young, it's been a great passion of mine to join a charity, an NGO, just work for an NGO full-time, because that's how I grew up. My family owns a children's home for abandoned babies, and it's just been a great passion. So when I was approached by Tithunder, I jumped at the opportunity, especially because I just graduated.
Oh, cool.
So I was looking for something to do, and I said to one of my friends, I said, it's impossible to work for an NGO because, you know, there's just nothing out there. And all of a sudden, this opportunity came up. Mm. And it really is just one of my great passions. And yeah, so I'm just so, so blessed to be working with them.
Fantastic. Tell us, what do you do for Tithunder?
So I head up there.
Tithunder. Hey, me, I'm out here with my extra remixes of Africa. Closer, yeah.
Yeah, so I head up their public relations for them. I've just joined them, I think, 2 weeks ago. It's very recent. But to see the passion and enthusiasm and gius, as the boys say.
Gius, papa.
It's just awesome and incredible. And it's just something that you want to join in on. And the minute that I went onto their social media pages, you could see immediately the difference between this new millennial NGO and, you know, just a back in the day kind of NGO. And you can see how much of a difference social media and correct public relations can make an impact on people. And that did just make such a big impact on me. And that's how I wanted to get involved. And that's one of the things I studied. So
pretty cool. What did you study and where?
I studied international relations and public relations at Monash
University. So we would have thought that you're going to become a politician or something close to that with international relations.
Absolutely not. Mm-hmm. I don't think I would have ever become a politician.
Yeah.
The reason why I did public relations and international relations was to work for an NGO. That's always been my goal.
Wow.
Originally I wanted to work for big international NGOs. Sorry. But I just think starting in your backyard is so much better than flying overseas. Sorry.
Shame. Okay, cool. We understand. Her voice is, you can have some water there while you relax. That's actually quite interesting that you had that from the beginning, from the onset. First year, you said, Dad, I already know what I want to do. I want to help people for a living. That's pretty much what I want to do. Because I know that there are people like that out there, but they're often not convinced that people can make a living just by helping other people, because they feel like if you give, who pays you to give? And like, how do you keep alive? You know what I mean? So people are always thinking about those things, saying maybe you can't do it full time. You have to do it like as a side hustle. I mean, they would meet Gareth 2 years ago and say, you see, Gareth is even doing it part time. He's, you know what I mean? And say, maybe these things are only part-time things. So it's really cool and encouraging to meet people like you who are not only doing this a full-time because it just kind of came across your way and you were not getting a job. So you're like, okay, I might as well just do this for some money. But instead, you did this for a purpose. You wanted to fill a gap in society. And these are the type of professions we need around. We need people. Let me just say, these are the professionals we need in the professions. We need people who are there because they've always wanted to be there. They want to fill a gap. They're not there for an opportunity or in terms of, I was just sitting at home and this thing came up and I'd rather just do something than just sit at home. Because those type of people give a half-hearted effort, you know. But now when it's always been your passion, that's when you have the details, you go and do the research, you stay up a little bit later, you come a little earlier because you're passionate about it. It's a burning thing. And I'm sure there's so many people out there who've got burning desires. There are things that they would really, really love to do. And they unfortunately never get to do them. But now you've taught us something interesting, and you said it's important that you have set yourself up to do those things even from the onset. Don't think that your dream is going to come by accident and just run you over a road while you were not looking. But you got to go find that car, you know, and say, hey, I'm looking for that car. Come here. And then that's how you pretty much go. I think your voice is back. You wanted to say something.
I was saying that I think it's great to start in your backyard, mine's South Africa, rather than trying to find other things, other places. I mean, obviously other people are called to different things, but I really do think that we as South Africans do have such social responsibility, and we've got so much social exclusion in our country that can be addressed. So I think it's great to start off in your backyard. Yeah.
Mm. Fantastic stuff. Coming back to you, Gareth, in fact, both of you at the same time. Now that we kind of have an idea of who you are and how you guys pretty much formed this organization, maybe we might ask a few questions still, because it's always quite fascinating to hear how a well-oiled machine runs. You know, I'm very much interested in the engine, because what I try to do here at the show is not only praise the car for moving, but we need to open up the engine, find out how you built the engine so that someone else can go and build an engine similar to this, so that we can have more amazing people like yourselves moving great vehicles that are empowering other people out there. Kind of get the point? Cool. Yeah. So, you know, forgive us for always peeping into your bonnet. Cool. So let's talk about some of the exciting work that you have done. 3 years in, tell us about some of the really great highlights.
Okay, cool. So when we originally started, we didn't have a specific cause in mind. We were of the opinion that things would come our way. There's so much to be done, and things will come and land on our doorstep as we go, and we can roll with those, and we can create events around those causes. There's so many people that are doing great stuff in the community. So we weren't so much a cause ourselves as we were trying to support other causes. Door of Hope was one of those, which is a fantastic cause out there, and they were busy trying to build a bigger school because, you know, their kids weren't going through. Their adoptions were down, and you know, more and more kids were coming to the school, so they were getting bottlenecked, and they now needed to actually increase, and because the kids weren't getting adopted by they were 4 or 5.
That's powerful. I don't know if people are thinking of those numbers. You know, we're thinking of petrol's up, interest rates, this.
Yeah.
Are we also thinking about the number that, hey, adoptions are down? Yo, that's powerful. Like,
and I think there's a direct cause between like your economic, situation, and that mm-hmm. would directly affect how many people are adopting children.
Yeah.
And so what we would do is we'd create events, and we would go out, raise funds, tell people about the fantastic work that these causes were doing. And then we would give them the money and help them to, you know, to make carry on making the fantastic difference they were doing. And we did that for 2 years. And then at about 18 months ago, by, I don't know, God's plan or sheer luck, whatever, we heard about this couple called Doris and Bongani, and they were based in the Valley of a Thousand Hills. No funding, nothing. Basically, all the parents that lived in the area would come drop their kids off at their little rondavel, and they would look after them during the day, try clean them, try teach them good Christian values, try teach them how to read, just keep them busy, basically, until the parents came home. I think they charged 10 rand or 20 rand a month to have these kids there.
And 10 rand a month? Yo, cheapest school fees in the world.
And that was their giving back. So that was basically to pay for the helpers that they had there at the school. But they were funding the feeding. They were trying to keep these kids healthy. And anyway, just like we had that calling when we started the MPO, we had the same calling there, where we were like, we can't, you know, there's these other charities that have funding and they're getting by, and these guys are doing stuff with nothing. And they're still giving their time and money and what little they have, you know, to making a difference. And then I think from then we all looked at each other when we went to visit their place, and we were just like, okay, this is what we're doing. And then we've just turned all of our focus and direction towards that. In the last 18 months, we've been trying to raise funds for that. We've built a school.
Wow.
So what we've ended up doing there now is we've ended up building our own ECD center. Not our own, the community, an ECD center for the community. And it's actually just made us hungrier. That school opened in January, and we're hoping to roll out another 9 of these schools by the end of next year.
So it opened this January?
Opened this January, yeah.
And the crowd goes wild! Wow, man, that is amazing.
Yeah. So we've managed to do that through building a really great ecosystem, where we've got a lot of corporates on board, all the suppliers, from the guys who are building the school to, you know, other sustainable partners that are helping us grow the vegetables, put healthy food together. We're busy still trying to kit out the kitchen, so we're looking for a kitchen supplier. Anyone knows someone, give us a call.
Yeah.
And we're organizing our volunteer days there, and there's just, we've developed a curriculum through the school, so we're trying to teach these kids. And the main premise is that if we can equip these kids in their early childhood, by the time they get to grade one, they can come in, you know, rocking out, and their chances of getting through the education system are just that much greater.
Wow, man. How old are you now, Gareth?
27.
27. Yeah. This man is 27 years old. He built a school, man. What you doing? What you doing?
Not me. See, Tanda built a school.
Listen to that.
Are the most incredible people ever.
Yeah. No, that's wise. Yeah.
I think this is, you know, really important, an important thing that I want to emphasize, is that school was built almost entirely off individual contributions. So there was no major corporate that came in from the beginning to fund that and just said, cool, here's $1 million. That was raised over 18 months, and majority of that was from individuals. So, you know, it's one thing to say, yeah, cool, we built a school, and Titanic built a school, but it really is nothing without, you know, the people that have joined and kind of been touched by the movement and joined along with it, because if they weren't there, we wouldn't have anything.
Mm. How much did you manage to raise?
We've raised a little bit over a million rand. That's what we've raised to date to build the school. Mm. Now we're in the more expensive part, because now to keep this thing running,
we've got fantastic
teachers there. You know, we don't charge high school fees. That's not what this is about. It's not a for-profit school. So we're trying to get as many partners on board to run this thing as sustainably as we can. If there's anyone out there with any sort of plugins that could help us, from textbooks to shelving to appliances, anything, like, you know, it just makes it that much easier, because then the money that we do raise can go towards paying teachers. We've got some corporates on board now that are actually, we've just had a teacher sponsored, which is fantastic. We've just got Wi-Fi because we want to start teaching the teachers and the caretakers how to use computers, and we're building an IT room. So we're trying to upskill the community as much as possible. And within this model, we're trying to, you know, make it as much of an, we intentionally use the word ecosystem because we want to make it so self-sustainable. So when we come in, you know, from neutering the dogs and trying to, you know, clean up the surroundings around the school, to educating the parents on how they need to feed their children when they're not at school, in addition to us feeding them at school. That's what we're trying to do. So this is, we're trying to take it beyond the walls of the ECD center.
Mm. This is amazing, man. Wow. And that's making a difference right there. It's not just, you know, in a small way, but you're trying to really be as detailed as you can in you know, filling that gap, which is something really, really inspiring. Wow, guys, my goodness. Yo, tell me now, when it comes to some of those individual contributions, you know, sometimes a person thinks, yo, you guys are trying to raise a million. Yeah, I don't even have a million. I can't give you guys a million. What were some of those donations? What did they look like? Let's not talk about the big ones, the small ones. So that I, because what I'm trying to get to here is, you know, trying to help people see how small a contribution can be to make a huge impact like that.
So we've got a variety of different means that we can collect, from Zapper, SnapScan, Give and Gain, PayPal. So for Midmar, just to use a recent example, and the person will be getting some sort of prize for it, but we got a donation of 10 Rand. And we love that. We love the fact that I actually spoke to them afterwards, and it was just a test to see that the money was going through, that it was the right account.
Okay.
But it kind of, you know, there's an important lesson in that, is that you can donate 10 Rand. Mm. And that 10 Rand for us goes towards, whether it's one child's lunch for, you know, next week. It's going to that.
Or even if it just bought that one brick. You see that brick number 175 for that classroom. That was that 10 bucks, man. You know what I mean? So it's special. It's special.
Yeah, so that million Rand that we've kind of raised over the last 18 months, there's no one big. It's not like there was a 750K payment and then a couple smallish 20Ks. It was 50 bucks, 100 bucks, 200, 500, occasional 5,000 by some very, you know, giving individuals. But that's how it, and it took time. And, you know, now we're really excited that we've got this kind of showroom school where we can actually showcase what we've been trying to do for the last 18 months. And we're hoping that we're going to catch the eye of some guys out there that do have the means to kind of come in and really help us upscale this, because there's, at the end of the day, there's 5.4 million children in that 18 to 5-year-old category that don't have access to their basic human right of early childhood development. And it is the most critical you know, phase of your development as an individual. And to try catch it up later when someone's struggling in grade 1 or 2 and they're not making their grades, to try rectify that missed opportunity is far more costly than just getting it right in the beginning.
Yeah, you're very right. I mean, I remember from my childhood days, you know, I was in those Afrikaans schools with those big Afrikaans boys, and I don't know why I'm growing so small and I'm growing slowly, and I felt so malnutritioned and undernourished. And it sometimes has to do with getting the basics right from the beginning, right? Yeah. Because it's more than just your physical body that develops. It's your mind. It's all those things. And it's also coming with a healthy mind and a, you know, just a healthy body to school helps you focus a little bit longer, and you start to do better. You know, and when you do better, obviously now your life becomes better, because you open certain doors and opportunities for yourself because of the fact that, you know, you've got better grades and things like that. So in fact, what you guys are doing is creating a ripple effect. And over time, you won't even be able to measure the impact that you have, started, because back then it looked like it was just a school for a few kids. But then what happens at those kids' homes and their cousins, and, you know, that we can't measure how big the ripple effect goes. You know, it's interesting because you could literally drop a penny in the middle of the ocean, and maybe after like a month, a small little wave will hit the, you know, let's say it'll hit the shores of Miami. That little wave was actually you, but you know, you can't see that. You know, but we've definitely been able to see that, even in a little pond, that your little drop eventually goes and becomes so huge that it's, you know, it's it's as big as, you know, you can see it from far, but that's because it's still standing water and you can see, you know. But I think the same type of impact happens in the world. And when you change someone's course of life, everything changes and it becomes this ripple effect that you might not even be able to trace back, but somehow some good ends up coming back your way because of the good stuff that you guys did back when you did it. Really great, guys. So Liz, you part of the marketing team. Tell us, how are you marketing this these absolutely amazing people, this great vehicle? We've had a look at their bonnet and we've also had a look at their tracks now, where they've driven and everything. Tell us about how you make sure that people know that this car exists.
Well, I think our number one focus is on social media.
Yeah, how can we get you?
So on Facebook, we are Sithanda. Mm-hmm. Should I spell it out?
No, okay, yeah, you can go for it.
Sithanda.
I was double checking you there just to make sure that, you know, you're not getting it wrong. I was reading your shirt while you were
cool. Sithanda Uplifting Project on Facebook. Yeah, so we've just recently done a promo video for our Mid Mile Mile, mm-hmm. which was so great, and it just turned out so wonderfully. Some people from Fire Productions came and helped us with this. So that's on all of our on our social media pages, which is also linked to our YouTube page. We're getting that up slowly but surely. Mm-hmm. And Instagram, we are Sithanda_up.
Yeah.
And same on Twitter. Yeah, Sithanda_up. I just think there's just so much you can do nowadays with social media and with filming and with photography in general, and just to create a great viewing of inside Sithanda, inside whatever business. For Sithanda, you can just see the great work that they're doing.
Fantastic. All right. So we can already see that promo video on your Facebook and so on. Mm-hmm. Great. Who did the voiceover?
So there were three people. Four. It was Gareth Rattle.
Uh-huh.
Yoa Basson. Strath Hagerman and Regan, yeah. Regan,
cool.
Yeah.
So some of the guys that started the organization are actually also, you know, involved in the production of it as well. Pretty cool, guys. Yeah. Wow, man. And it could not have been easy, I'm sure. I mean, this whole journey has never been easy, but there's been a couple of really great moments. I call it the yeah-neh moment. What was the yeah-neh moment for you, Gareth?
Yo. I think there's not one that sticks out for me. Uh-huh. I think there's so many great things that had, selfishly, this journey has changed my life. Mm-hmm. It's changed the way that I perceive life and the way that I want to live it, and the individuals that I've met along the way. So I think it would be impossible for me to kind of narrow that down to one individual moment. This, I'm sitting on Cliff Central, man. Like, it's cool. It's cool. I think, you know, it's so exciting. And every day there's something that's changing it for us, you know. And that's making me even hungrier to do more and to keep going. It's not a chore. It's not a chore.
Fantastic. Liz, what is your yeah-neh moment when you're like, wow, okay, I haven't been here long, but this is cool.
Yeah, I haven't been here long at all. But I think just meeting the boys who would have thought five young boys starting an NGO would be possible? And just with so much passion. As Gareth said, it's not a chore. It's just something that he absolutely loves. So just meeting all of them and just seeing their passion, just seeing their love and their hard work. I feel like I've got a lot to live up to because they just work so hard and with such a lot of love. Yeah. So it's just really great to be surrounded by such great people.
Fantastic stuff. All right, guys, any last words in wrapping up? The hour, as I did say, is the shortest hour in the week. It's already over. Can you believe it? Last words, maybe Gareth, you can just wrap it up for us.
Yeah, cool, man. I think from our side, if you were like us and you don't know where to start, but you know you want to start making a difference, that's what Stander was started for. So get in contact with us. We'll plug you in, whether it's into a community project or into a fundraising initiative or into anything. It doesn't matter. We'll find a place for you. That's a good start. And if that means that, you know, from there you go and you end up starting your own one, absolutely fantastic. That makes our heart happy.
Absolutely fantastic. Well, just like that, guys, it's the shortest hour of the week and it ends yet again. Of course, as you heard, start with where you are, with what you have. And if you don't have anything, then find someone who does and do something there and just get involved. You know, there are people out there who are making the world a better place, and you can do your part as well. Even if it's a small part, even if it's just $10, you want to be brick number 155 right there in that classroom. It's the Unplugged and In Charge show. Thank you very much for tuning in. We out.
This is CliffCentral.com.